Welcome to the Spaking Podcast. You can find all our episodes on spakingpodcast.com. We're also on BitChute and YouTube, the Spaking Podcast. I also have the Awakening Podcast, the Meditation Podcast, and the Learn Polish Podcast, and all we can be found on roycollin.com. Today, my guest, actor, speaker, author, please welcome Tyler Foley from Canada.
It's a pleasure to be on the show, Roy.
So I always like, rather than me scripting it, I prefer you to tell the listeners who's Tyler.
Well, it's a good question. So I am all those things that you mentioned, an author, speaker, started as a child actor. I'm now a father and husband. I'm all things, really. But really what your audience probably cares about, I've been a professional speaker for 35 years, mostly from my time in film and television and theater. I took the stage the first time when I was 6 years old, fell in love as soon as I got my first round of applause, and have really applied all the stagecraft that I learned in performance into becoming a professional keynote presenter and speaker over the last 6 to 10 years.
Okay. So like doing keynote, because that's something that always interests me, because a lot of people, you know, they aspire to be keynote speakers or they want to improve their skill set. So you might just give us a few things of how you organize yourself for when you're doing a keynote.
Yeah. So keynotes are great because at that point, somebody's already asked you, you're already established as an authority. What I like to do is make sure that I'm delivering the best that I can for the audience. So in your case, we'll consider this a keynote presentation, right? You have had me on as a guest. And so my job is to really tailor and customize the content that I'm providing to you and your audience, you know, so knowing that primarily it's about professional speaking. And so we're going to focus on that, where if some people bring me on because I used to be a stuntman, some people bring me on to speak about safety because that's a career that I got into after being a stuntman. But from my perspective, usually when I'm presenting and I'm doing my own presentations, it's around public speaking. So my job as a keynote is to come and make sure that you as a host or as a promoter are getting for your audience everything that your audience needs. So a lot of that goes into research, making sure that I'm asking the right questions ahead of time, making sure that I'm providing the most value that I can to the audience. And that just comes with A, knowing that you're the authority. So there isn't a topic I couldn't talk about and knowing how to present that information in a cohesive manner. Little things too, like knowing how much time you have. Do you have 20 minutes? Do you have 30 minutes? Do you have 60 minutes for your keynote? What is the expectation when you're being paid the big dollars to be up and be the final face that the audience sees?
No, very good. Well, with the big dollars, you'll have to get an IOU from me. So
yes.
So when like you are doing the speaking, because I know you help people to actually overcome stage fright. So
yes.
I suppose what I'd like to delve into first is how you prepare when you're doing a speech. What's your actually structure?
So I have an interesting pre-talk prep, and this has been honed again over 35 years starting in the theater. So what I like to do is find a quiet space, usually before the auditorium or the theater or wherever I'm presenting is opened up. And I like to go through and I actually touch surfaces. So I like imprint my DNA over everything just to feel like I own the theater. It also helps me because I'll sit in various seats to check what the eye lines are and the sight lines so that I know if I'm presenting on the stage, who can see me and where am I at? And I try to literally get into the mind of my audience. If I am sitting here, what can I see and what does the stage look like? And I want to get into my audience's mind. And then what I will do is while I'm in the theater, I will do some breathing exercises. There's a great app. It's free. Most people can get it. I think it's on Apple and Android, called Prana Breath. And I got familiar with Prana Breath when I was actually living in Asia. And it's just breathing techniques, and various cycles will have various physiological effects on you. So I like to do a calming one. Then I like to do a focus one. And then I will finish with power breath. And power breath allows me to literally breathe my energy into a room. And I don't know if it's real or not, but in my head, it's a thing. And I equate it very similar to, have you ever walked into a room just after two people have been fighting? And you can feel that energy, you know that it's there, that air is negatively charged. What I like to do with my power breath and with my focus is I like to put a positive energy into the room. Whether people can feel it or not, it doesn't matter because it's my thing. So what I'm doing is I'm breathing my energy, my positivity into that room for a good performance, for a good show, for a good talk, so that when people come in, they're naturally going to feel that, whether they're in tune to it or not. Those who are going to be in tune to it. They're going to feel it. And those who are oblivious to it, it's not for them anyway. So once that's done, I will then go backstage. I will look over my notes. I never, ever, ever have a prepared speech. So I don't memorize speeches. Even as an actor, I probably don't memorize speeches because I was an actor, because for 30, 35 years, all I had to do was memorize other people's words and say it exactly the way that it was supposed to be said. And I like the freedom of being able to have a conversation, have a dialogue the way that we are right now. And that's all I do with my audiences. Anytime I'm brought up to be a keynote presenter, I'm having a dialogue with my audience. In fact, it's an interesting statistic that I read. If you include your audience in your discussion, you will have 92% engagement. If it's just a monologue and you're just speaking to your audience, the engagement is only 78%. So you actually gain an incredible boost, some 14% more engagement by including your audience into a dialogue. And so I allow flexibility and freedom within my talks so that audience input is there. And so while I'm looking over my notes, I'm looking at what my host wants, right? Who the promoter has as far as their guests go, what some of the deliverables they've asked me to accomplish. And so I have a couple of notes that I will make. If I have the opportunity before an event, I will talk with the audience as well. So like, you know, usually there's a waiting area or some kind of ante room where people are waiting before they get let into the main room for the theater. If I get a chance to, I will walk around if it's like a cocktail hour or just a, you know, whatever. And I will ask people, you know, what are you doing? Why did you come here? Usually they don't know who I am at that point. So it makes it a little bit easier. I have a little bit of anonymity and just, you know, small chat. What do you want to get out of this? What are you looking forward to? Why are you here? What brought you here? Those kind of questions. So that as I'm going over my notes and I'm thinking about what some of that feedback or response was, then I'm able to mentally prepare how I want that, the flow of the talk to go. And then usually about 3 to 4 minutes before I actually take the stage, again, I take some time to do a little bit of breathing, focus exercise, again, focus in and then power, take a little bit of water, have myself a little hydration break just to get the energy flowing. And then I'll do movements. I got to move. I got to get my body hyped up. So I'll do like jumping jacks or running in place, some kind of physical movement to get myself going, get myself limber. And then I get backstage and I wait. I wait to hear somebody announce my name and I'm off to the races.
Yeah, brilliant. And just regarding the breath work, because I'm actually going through a course at the moment. I've done a lot of breath work, you know, around the world with different people and even with Wim Hof and everything. I don't people realize the benefit of that. Is that something that you practice daily, irrespective of being on stage?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm doing breath work. It's funny that you mentioned Wim Hof. So I've been having a cold shower for almost 3 years now. And I learned about the cold shower thing before I learned of Wim Hof. I actually had read it in a book from a Navy SEAL, Jocko. And he talks about cold showers and the benefits of it. And then I had been introduced to Wim Hof through a friend and went, oh, well, so now there's this and this. And Tony Robbins talks about his cold plunges all the time. And I've had the privilege to be at a few events backstage with Tony. And so it's been really interesting to have this cycle of the cold shower. But what they don't talk about is the need for the breath control. So Wim Hof discusses it, the power and the control and being able to still the mind and still the body is really important with the breath work. And I've been using it semi-meditatively. I also use it for a thing called PQ reps, which a good mentor of mine, Shahzad, introduced me to. He's a coach. He's a coach's coach. And so PQ reps with breath and stillness and mindfulness, they all kind of go hand in hand in hand. So I learned about it early in my first bit of stage work, probably about 8 years old, learning to control my breath so that I could sing, learning to control my breath so that I could project into the audience, and also learning to control my breath just to still and to calm and to take in the space. And I didn't realize that it was meditative until much later on when people started talking about meditation. I went, hey, wait, I've been doing that in theater for years and years and years.
Oh, brilliant. And I actually did in Poland in the lakes in the winter, you know, jumping in when it was minus 10 degrees centigrade, you know, for like 10, 15 minutes. And it's weird. You might think, whoa, this is going to be terrible, but you get so much energy from it. It's unbelievable.
It does. Yeah. And it's funny because I'm in Canada. I do the same thing, similar climate, right? It'll be minus 10, minus 20 Celsius. A good friend of mine, Chris Beasley, and I were doing it for all this past winter. Actually, he just got introduced to Wim Hof. I think might have been January of this year. And he had a friend who's been jumping in, and he, you know, we have some really nice cold lakes. And what's funny is, as you are well aware, when it's minus 10 outside, it's actually warmer in the water because your water's probably 2-3 degrees. So you hop in and it's actually warmer there. When you pop out, that's when you're cold. So then you get back in and it becomes this mind over matter, because that rush, right? You feel that just, and everything in you is like, get out of this. But if you can control your breath and your mind and be like, no, then you can relax into it. And as you said, when you get out of that water, you're so energized. I mean, your audience only need look at me right now. Just before we got on, as part of my prep, I did have my cold shower, because we've got the nice little time difference going on. And this is the energy that I have. I've done my breath work. I've had my cold shower. Now I'm ready to tackle the day.
Excellent. And like, I mean, you said you're doing speaking for 35 years and you're speaking since you're 6. So I'm guessing you're 41 or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, people need to look at the video because you look about 25. So I think you're doing something right. Like,
I'm telling you, it's the cold showers. But and thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'm coming up on my 42nd birthday, and 25, I will take 25. I'll let my agent know that you cast me at 25, because a lot of times she struggles with it, because she's been my agent for years now, years. And I think because she knows my age, she struggles with it until we put myself on tape, and then we're there. So thank you very much, Roy. I take that.
And like, speaking of the acting, because I mean, when you're pitching, I mean, at the end of the day, like when you're trying to get in a film, you have to pitch in front of people. So that's speaking as well as communicating. So any tips and tricks that you've learned with that? What's the best way to?
Honestly, it's funny, because in acting, you want to be completely opposite to yourself. Usually, right? Like, you're playing a character. I know I've made a career of playing really mean dudes. And I just, a lot of just unsavory characters. And it's completely and totally typecast to myself, if you asked any of my friends. But one of the things that I learned really quickly in the audition room was that I couldn't be somebody else. If I was going to get cast, even as a bad guy, like somebody who would do a thing that I would never do, I still had to figure out what it would take for me to do that thing so that I was doing it authentically and real. One of the things that I talk about in my book is that authenticity is synonymous with self-awareness. We need to know who we are in order to be actually able to present ourselves authentically. And that goes from when I was auditioning for characters, I had to find where I was similar to a character and where I was different and what would take me to do that. And now that I'm speaking on stage, I need to find out, how can I present myself as me? I can't be Tony Robbins. I can't be Les Brown. I can't be Brian Tracy, right? And all of those men and a few women have had some very profound impact on me. Some great, great speakers who I've had the privilege to train with and to work with. I think of Molly Bloom as an incredible example of that. If you meet her in real life, and she has an incredible, incredible story, so good, in fact, they made a Hollywood movie out of it, that you, who she is on stage is who she is backstage. And it's one of the secrets to her success is that she knows who she is and she's grounded in it. And she's somebody who doesn't have a lot of ego either. And really she should. She, you know, Olympic athlete and ran one of the largest private poker, illegal poker room in the world. This is a woman who has done some great things and could have a very large ego, but doesn't. And she's a phenomenal person. I'm very, very grateful that I've had the pleasure to meet her. And I try to bring that to all the training that I do and to my own presentations, because all I can be is me. I know my experiences. I know who I am. And I think that's, if I could give one bit of advice to your audience, is know who you are. Unapologetically know who you are. If you're striving to be a something, that's fine. You can have the goals, you can do it, but don't pretend you're something that you're not. I know a lot of people have that fake it till you make it mentality, or you have to see it to be it. I have an opposite view. I feel that you have to be it. You have to not only see it, but believe it here before you're ever going to see the results of that manifest. So when I go into an audition, there's roles that I know that I'm not going to get because they're not for me. But there are roles where I know that I am that person. I know that I can do that role. Or there are a role that I really, really, really want. I remember a couple of years ago, I auditioned for a show called Sex, Lies, and Murder. Very scandalous. And it's one of those real recreation ones. They take, you know, true crime, and they do the recreation of events that have happened. And this one particular role that I went out for was the absolute polar opposite of me, but it seemed fun. And I could see where this guy would have got caught up in a lifestyle. And I just wanted it. I just wanted it. And I went in and I didn't try to pretend to be somebody else. I went and I just did me. I did me if I had been this bad guy. And it resonated and I got the role. And ironically, because I had done so well in it, they actually brought me back in the second season because it was recreations. And I got to do a whole another different bad guy, which was even worse. I really didn't like that character, but I could again sympathize and identify with traits within that character. And I was able to bring something to life there. So if I could give again, that one piece of advice, it's knowing that authenticity is synonymous with self-awareness. If you don't know who you are on the inside, your audience will know instantly. They will feel the disconnect and they will reject it really quick. Where if you are centered and grounded and connected, you're going to connect and resonate with your audience immediately. We as human beings innately know authenticity and we can feel it when somebody's being real.
And what about when you don't get a part? Because, I mean, you've obviously been in a lot of different things and your hit rate would be better than a lot of others. But I don't know, what percentage is it that you would get? 10% or
50%?
10. Well, 10 is the...
Yeah.
What's it feel like? What's the, you know, because you have to deal with rejection. You're going in there and you, especially if you want something, it's like... Because it's the same for a speaker. I'm kind of thinking of a speaker trying to get on a stage or do a TEDx as well, because they're facing the rejection. And some people, you know, you'd be used to it because you're actually, you know, auditioning a lot. But some people, they get knocked once and they kind of, it's like the world ends from.
So there's a couple of ways to handle it. First of all, I'm a metrics guy. So for as long as I've been acting, I actually have a spreadsheet. I used to have a little a diary notebook, but then I, you know, when I got old enough and Excel came out, and I've had an Excel spreadsheet to track my acting now for 2021 now, since 1997. So like a long, long time. I'm not even going to do the math. What is that? 24 years or something. So I am a big fan of just knowing numbers. So when I was doing the acting, I would do things like I would track who the casting directors were that I was going to, what wardrobe I wore, I even knew what time of the day I was auditioning and what days I was auditioning. So I know that I tend to book better afternoon auditions with certain casting directors. I know the wardrobe that I'm wearing. And I also know that because I've been on both sides of the camera, I've produced films, I've been a reader for casting directors, I've been a producer of film and theater. I know that the casting process has very little to do with actual talent. My talent does not define whether or not I get a role. My talent defines whether or not I have the ability to even audition for it. So for speakers who are going for something like TEDx, they have to remember that the TEDx panel is looking for certain things, and they get very myopic on their view of what they are looking for. And if you can't fit your square peg into their round hole, you're never going to get chosen. You could have the greatest, most amazing talk ever, but they won't bring it because it doesn't fit that theme or that mold or what they need at that time. And I've been able to learn that because, again, of the acting. Being a reader, I got to see some incredible actors come in and read, and some amazing performances that will have never been cast into the production because the lead was 5'4" and they couldn't have somebody taller. So when they cast the 5'4" person, now it cascaded down and everybody needed to be 5'4" or shorter. And that limits it. So you have this incredible actress or actor come in and perform and they're 5'6" and you go, sorry, can't do it, right? You can't control your height. Talent had nothing to do with it. It was things that were outside of your control. Sometimes it's a color of eyes. Sometimes it's the color of hair. Sometimes you're too short, you're too tall. There are things that, you know, randoms. I literally knew a guy who didn't get cast because the casting director didn't like people named Mark. Just had an aversion to the name Mark, right? And this one Mark was hands down the best. Didn't get it because of his name. Like, you can't control that. And I learned that, you know, nobody is perfect for one thing. Like, and this is my advice to any speaker. And this goes a little bit beyond to anybody who's self-employed, any entrepreneur. Quit trying to sell your stuff to everybody. Yeah, you may sell pizza and everybody eats, but not everybody likes pizza. And even if everybody does like pizza, they may not want pizza right now. So I may be really, really good at what I do, but I may not be the right choice right now. And I need to be okay with that. And how you become more universal is by getting more niche. The more specific you can get, the more honed you can become in your message, the more it will speak to everybody. And I think of when Apple released the iPod, they didn't market it to everybody. Everybody on the planet had an iPod for a while, but they were marketing it specifically to 25 to 35, you know, carry 1,000 songs in your pocket and go, and, you know, it was youthful and it was sporty and it was trendy and it was hip. And they had this very niche market that they were identifying, but everybody goes, well, I want to feel youthful and I want to feel. And so all of a sudden, by very honed messaging, all of a sudden everybody wanted a piece of it. Coca-Cola did it as well. Some really smart ad campaigns get that really focused niche. And so for me, when I'm, you know, presenting, and that's why I said, when I'm looking to have a keynote, if somebody's coming to have me on a show, I can speak about public speaking. Well, that is like, where do you want to go with that? For you, right? Let's tackle the nerves and the stage fright. Okay, we can get into that. That's a little bit more niche. So now I'm talking to an audience that maybe is afraid to step onto stage, right? So yeah, I can work with the people who are just jonesing to get on it, but I also can work with the people who aren't. It's a matter of tailoring the message and making sure that you are providing value in a very niche way.
So speaking of that, because we know some people, you know, they'll bite their nails off before they would get up on stage.
Yes.
You know, because there is people, you know, obviously there's listeners that are, you know, they're trying to, you know, improve their skills, but there's also people, they just want to make the first jump. What advice would you give them?
Well, first of all, know that you're not alone. 77% of North Americans, and so I'm going to assume that that's going to be worldwide because it's still a fairly large demographic, but my statistics are for North America. 77% of North Americans have a fear of public speaking. And so that means if you look to your left and you look to your right, both those people are probably terrified because it's the dude that's standing in front that isn't, right? So you are in good company. Most people claim to have a fear of public speaking. And what I think your audience needs to know is that everybody listening to this right now who is saying, yes, I have a fear of public speaking, is actually lying to themselves. They don't have a fear of public speaking. And I can prove this. I want them to think right now, when was the last time they had a conversation with somebody outside of their house? Because that's being in public and that is speaking. And I can already hear the gears going. Somebody's going, whoa, wait. But that was with somebody that I knew. And yes, it was outside and it was in public, but it was a private conversation and that doesn't count. Yes, it does. You were speaking to somebody in public. And if there were two or three people, I bet you everybody here has had a social gathering where they talked to 20 or 30 people over the course of a night at a dinner party or a small gathering or a wedding or something like that, where they talked to people. But, and I hear the argument, but Tyler, I wasn't up on stage. I wasn't giving a toast. I was just talking with people. That's all public speaking is. You're just talking with people. You're just presenting ideas. And I would postulate that most people are not afraid of public speaking. What they're afraid of is public judgment. So we have no problem speaking to people as long as we know ahead of time that they're on board. The second we have to say something that we're not sure of ourselves, that is when that fear and that anxiety starts to come up with. So a couple of ways to overcome that is, first of all, understand that these two people are already on your side because they don't want to be the person up there either. So the second you get up there, these two are going to go, oh, I'm so glad that isn't me. They're going to have your best interest at heart. Your audience is on your side, especially if you've been asked to public speak. So your audience was already on board when I showed up. They didn't know anything about me, but you, Roy, as a host, said, Tyler's going to come on. He's going to give you some information. So they're already like, oh, Tyler must know something about the information that's going to be presented. So I already have established authority just because you asked me to come here. So, and this applies to anybody who's in a boardroom, or if you've been asked to give a toast at a wedding or something, you've been asked for a reason. Maybe you're a bridesmaid, you're the maid of honor, and you've been asked to give the speech because you know the bride better than anybody else. Or you've been asked to give the sales statistics for your quarterly meeting or something like that. The reason you've been asked is because somebody thinks that you know more about that than anybody else. So you already have the authority and people are already on your side. Nobody, I guarantee you, nobody has ever gone to a presentation or a talk and sat in their chair and thought to themselves, well, I hope this sucks. Man, it would be great if this person gets up here and just bombs terribly. I hope she doesn't know a thing about what she's talking about. You know, nobody does that. We come in and we go, I hope this is good, right? We want the best. And so if you know that your audience is on your side, you've already taken away 90% of the headache because, again, you're not afraid of public speaking, you're afraid of public judgment. And so if you can overcome the fear of being judged and do that by knowing that you are the authority, that you have been asked to do that because you know more than anybody else, combine that with the power of story. So if you can link that to your own story, which you know better than anybody else, you'll be able to tell that story better than anybody else, and there's nothing to fear, and nobody can call BS on you anyways because they weren't there. You were the person who did it and you knew. So that would be a couple of quick tips. I could go on and on and on for days and ages, but those would be my first little bit to get you going.
I think that's a brilliant one, to be honest, which I've never heard it that way. And I think it's sweet. There's one thing that when I was doing my research on you, Houston, we have a problem. You spoke in Mission Control. Yeah, that's an interesting one. I'd like to hear a bit about that.
Oh, that was awesome. So I got to do some training and provide some some guidance to a really cool group called Speak America. And Ernesto Vidego, so anybody who's looking to be a public speaker, if you look up Ernesto, he runs these really great programs called Speak, America, Speak Europe, Speak Dubai. So he comes a couple of times a year to various areas when he could. Obviously, it's not happening right now. And it's a really great way for people who want to break into the speaking business to get exposure and get recognition and get a reel. It's usually the biggest problem. When you're a speaker, you need to have the stinger reel, right? Show me where you've spoke at. And so Ernesto put together this great program, and I was very privileged and lucky that my agent and manager, Gail Kingsbury, is very good friends with Ernesto and was able to arrange for me to come down and provide some training for this group of people, talk about stage presence, help them out with understanding the difference between speaking to an audience and then pretending to speak to an audience when the camera's there. And they have a real live audience at a lot of these venues. So what he does is he usually arranges two venues a day over the course of a week. So you end up speaking at 14 different engagements as a speaker. Very quickly, you're giving like 2-3 5-minute presentations, TED style, but in multiple locations so that you can get a lot of footage of you giving a talk and a presentation that you can cut in and out of. But what people get nervous about or don't understand is how to do that and make it effective for the camera, right? So when the camera gets there, a lot of people aren't very good in front of the camera. So I was able to bring in some of my expertise, being able to speak to them from a speaker perspective, being like, look, I know what it's like on stage, and being able to speak to them from a director perspective as somebody who has been both in front of and behind the camera and say, look, I understand this might feel awkward, but if you do this, it will have more impact than if you do this, or change this, or we need you to be aware of some of these sight lines or be aware of this. And don't look at the camera. Okay, now look at the camera. Now don't look at the camera, right? So I was able to come down and provide some expertise. And one of the places where we got to speak at was the Johnson Space Center in Houston at Mission Control. And oh man, was that a thrill. I got to like touch a spacesuit that had been in space. And we got to eat up in the private dining area at Mission Control that typically is only reserved for astronauts and VIPs. And they have a phenomenal stage there. Like it is a great presentation space to be able to speak at and present at, and for me to be able to provide some content to those speakers and a general audience was just absolutely phenomenal. I've got a great shot of me with the backdrop. So they have a big Earth projection that was taken from one of the shuttle missions, and that's a great shot of the Earth. And so it's me in front of the Earth, and there's two real spacesuits that had been on mission either side of me, and oh, it was just a joy.
There's advantages for doing things like that, so that's a nice one. And just getting back to your book, what else are you covering in the book?
Well, the book is really a whisper for people, a whisper of encouragement for anybody who is fearful of public speaking. Now, you know, the book has some great tips in it for seasoned veterans, but really I wrote it for people who are afraid to get up on stage or even get up in a boardroom. And the reason for that is, again, a couple of statistics that I've read. People's fear of public speaking has 10% impotence on their ability to earn. So if you were able to public speak, you could be earning 10% more right now than what you are. And it has a 15% reduction on their ability to get a promotion. So you are less likely to be promoted in your organization or within your career based on a fear of public speaking, and you're going to be earning 10% less. And the promotion usually comes with higher money as well. So you're really reducing your ability to just have a lifestyle. And and for no reason other than a fear of judgment. So in the book, we go over a lot of different topics to help people overcome what they assume is a fear of public speaking, and we really hone it down into a fear of judgment. So we help them discover why they're afraid, what they're afraid to say. And in fact, we discuss that what you're afraid to say is probably what your audience needs to hear. And if you can embrace that, you will have a more authentic talk. You will engage your audience, and your audience will be on your side. I worked with just a phenomenal author and speaker, Jenna, and she gave one of the greatest talks I've ever seen in saying the thing that she was most afraid to say. And she got up on stage and talked about her husband's infidelity and made that publicly known and aware. And one of the greatest parts of that talk, it was only 12 minutes long. And in it, she was talking about how infidelity, everybody thinks that somebody is just mean or evil when they cheat. And she said, infidelity starts as a series of small choices and small compromises within a moral compass that end up pushing somebody down a path that gets to this. And that, you know, as somebody who has had that trust taken away and violated, that it's hard to gain it back, that it's hard to get back to that intimacy. And she's giving this talk and this presentation. And what made it so powerful is everybody's sitting there and she's basically giving the, I turned the other cheek. I could be mad at him and I am. I could be hurt by him and I am, but I'm choosing to stay in my marriage. I'm choosing to work on it because he made a mistake. And his mistake was this, but I have made mistakes in our relationship too. They didn't lead to infidelity, but they led to some of the scenarios that led to his infidelity. And so she took a really interesting approach to it. And then what made that speech so powerful was she turned to her audience and she said, and I bet you're wondering, if you're wondering how my husband feels about all of this and me being up here and airing our dirty laundry and speaking about this publicly, all you need to do is ask him. And she pointed to him. He was sitting in the audience. See, you made it. You saw the face. And I know your audience is hearing it and feeling it right now. Like, as soon as she did that, it was powerful because it showed how they had worked together to find their relationship again, that it was strong because of the work that they were forced to then put into it, as opposed to using this event to define it. Now, most people would be absolutely terrified to go on stage and talk about infidelity. But you look at the best talks you've ever had, and it's people exposing their soul, saying the thing that they're afraid to say without the fear of judgment. And I can tell you this right now, when you expose yourself that raw, an audience does not jump on you to try and attack. They jump on you to try and support. People have your back. You tell them the things that you're afraid to say, and they are on board with you right now, instantly, and you will have the support. And yeah, you may get some judgment in here. It's going to happen, but the majority of it's going to be support. And if you just look for the love, as opposed to it becomes a mindset thing, right? So in the book, we teach people to look for the support, find what you're good at, find your wheelhouse, find your community, and you will be able to deliver incredible content and value. And it doesn't have to be to a large audience. I'm teaching people how to give value in the boardroom, how to give value in a toolbox talk. A lot of my clients come from construction and are supervisors and aren't used, you know, they just need their staff or their workforce or their labor force to just be able to listen to them, to hear the message, to keep them safe, right? So what is your message? Why is it important? Why is it important to you? Why is it important to your audience? And we break down all of those things so that you can feel more confident just standing up in your authority and knowing that you have something to say and it's important that somebody hears it.
Yeah. Love it. And I know if finally you've written, I don't know that part of the book as well, but I've seen something that like what the errors that seasoned professionals are doing. You've like,
oh yeah,
you might just let, because you know we've got the professionals listening in as well. So
and again, I've made this mistake. I've seen dozens of other people make this mistake. The biggest one that I see even seasoned professionals make is if you're allotted 60 minutes, talk for 50. Everybody thinks that they need to fill like, oh, I've got an hour and a half. So I'm going to give all of this content. I'm going to give an hour and a half. I'm going to fill it. I'm going to go over my time, you know, because what I have to say is so important that we're just going to deliver. And that's great. I'm so happy that you want to deliver to your audience. Your audience, particularly if you're in a seminar style presentation where there's multiple people, your promoter desperately needs you to stay on time. So don't take up the full 60 minutes. If you're given 60 minutes, plan for 50. Guaranteed you're going to go over anyway. And what it does is it allows time for engagement with your audience. So I always have a little clock, a little timer. I know where I'm at. And I, you know, you usually have a promoter or a host who's kind of doing one of these. So I will know that I'm going, if I have a 60 minute talk, I'm going to talk for 50. And if they're like, keep going, as opposed to wrap it up, keep going. I go, okay, do I have any questions? And that provides a really good opportunity to check in with your audience for one, find out if your message resonated, because there may need to be some clarification. It gets that audience engagement going, because now it's a dialogue as opposed to a monologue. So you jump from the 78% engagement to the 92% engagement. And you become a hero too. So I know I've been called back a few times because I didn't let my ego get in the way. I know that my content is good. I can give you nuggets in 10 minutes just as easily as I can give them to you in an hour. And the key is, if I only have 10 minutes, I give you the big stuff right up front. Like, you want to know a thing, let's dive in right now. A lot of speakers, particularly as they start to get more seasoned and more veteran, and they usually have a product or something to sell. So they want to keep the good stuff. So I'm going to give you a couple of little juicy nuggets, but I'm going to keep the good stuff here so that when you buy my product, then I can give you that stuff. I'm the exact opposite. I want to give you the good stuff right now, because the minutia detail is the sand that adds up. But I want to give you the boulder first. Like, I want to give you this because I know for a fact that this is massive. It's huge, but I also know that it's a boulder and it's really hard for you to carry. So I'm going to need to give you some support and underneath. So the longer we spend together, the more grains of sand I can give to support the weight of that boulder. But I want to give you the boulder up front. I want to give you the big golden nugget, and then we can sift for the fine gold that's really going to develop wealth. I mean, you look at the people who mine gold in the Yukon, everybody's chasing the nugget, but they get so busy chasing the nugget that they think that's where the value is. And the value is really in the fine gold, the tailings gold that adds up and adds up and adds up. So yeah, it's great to find the nugget. So I'm going to give you the nugget all the time here. But if you want the fine gold, you want the fine detail, the information that really supports that, that's when I'm going to come to you. And so for the seasoned speakers, don't be afraid to give all of your good stuff right up front. That's where you get the value. That's where you get people hooked. Anybody could go on any of my social media and they could get the entire book content. They can get all of my training. They could probably get my 5-day workshop. If they just follow the social media, they're going to get all that information for free. It's just going to take longer, but I have no problem giving it away, because why? It does no good up here. It only does good in the world if I get it out here and to you. So those are the two biggest mistakes I find, that they hold on to their nuggets, that they don't want to give it out because somehow it's sacred information, which is not. There's nothing that I've said today that somebody else hasn't already said. I've just said it the Sean Tyler Foley way. And the other thing is make sure that you truncate your talk, because I know, again, I have booked a lot of jobs because the promoter was so thankful that I didn't let my ego get in the way, that I gave a whole bunch of value up front. And when they came to me and they said, okay, listen, those last two speakers both took 15 minutes longer than what they should, and now we're a half an hour behind. I know I promised you an hour, but are you okay only taking a half an hour? Because we got to get this train going. And I go, absolutely. And so if I'm given a half an hour, how long am I talking for? 25 minutes. That was it. So I've been given a half hour. I'm going to give 25 minutes of value, and then I'm going to look. Do you want me to keep going, or do you need me to get off? And if you need me to keep going, then I turn to my audience and say, now, are there any questions on that? How can I be of service? Is there anything else that you would like addressed right now? And then they give it to me, and then I can do it, and I can control my time. And now we're to where we need to be.
And I've seen a top offer been on stage, and his ego got in the way. He stayed on for over half an hour more, which basically ate into the time of the next guy. The next guy will get called back. He will never get called back because, yeah, you know, he's not working for the audience. You know, he's working for the promoter as well. So, you know, what you've just said is ideal. And I know I was saying we'd kind of wrap up now, but like you mentioned about the workshops, because I have that written down as well. You said you do like 5-day workshops and kind of, so you might, because people like to structure a workshop. They want to know what's the best way. What's your secret sauce?
Well, so I don't have a secret sauce. My workshop, so I have, you know, the funnel, right? Everybody has the funnel. So I have a very simple funnel. Most people have it. It's not unique. It's not wonderful, but right, we've got the book. So I've got all the free information. So people who come onto the website get the free information. And then we have the book. It's a little bit more. And then I have usually a 1-day kind of crash course, quick training. I also have a 4.5-hour digital course. And so it's all basically the same information. It's just the difference is how much time we have to spend on working on those skills. So with the 2.5-day seminar, we get to do, usually we'll have about 200 people in the room. And over the 2.5 days, everybody will get a chance to work on a signature speech for about a half an hour within a small pod group. And then certain people, everybody, we usually divide it into about groups of 20. So we'll have 10 finalists who then get to come and present on stage. And then really we get to workshop with one or two people who really get it. And that way everybody can learn from everybody else, but you don't get a lot of the one-on-one. And then with the 5-day, because we limit that to usually about 80 participants and over 5 days, now I'm getting a lot more time with me and my coaches to give really specific one-on-one tips and training and techniques. What we're teaching doesn't change. What changes is the amount of one-on-one time that we have. And then with my private coaching clients, I usually take on 7 to 10 a year. And then, you know, that means that you've got a year with me. I usually do an 8-hour dedicated day where we rent a stage and we work on stagecraft. We work on crafting the talk. We work on pulling out the message, finding your authentic voice, both in what you're saying and where your resonance and your tone is. So we do a lot of one-on-one work. And so the difference between the digital course and the seminar, the 5-day seminar or workshop, is nothing as far as content goes. The content is the same. The difference is how much time do I have with you to work on that content one-on-one? And of that time, how much do you have to actually practice your craft with feedback and with engagement and with the audience? So the content doesn't change. It's just how much time is dedicated individually to each person that does.
Excellent, I love it. And you know, you're on about giving the golden nuggets. I know by just listening to what information you've given during this conversation that your book is one that I'd be interested in. I'm sure the listeners as well. So how can people get in contact with you?
But the easiest way is to go to SeanTylerFoley.com, and Sean spelled the proper Irish way, SeanTylerFoley.com. Anybody who wants a couple of the free nuggets, I've got a little radio button up in the upper right-hand corner. It's called the method. You just click on the method and you can get my 5 insider tips. And it's a free download for you. Anybody who's interested in the book, they can go to their local bookstore and pre-order it. I know my publisher, Morgan James, will be very thankful for all the pre-orders. So, and anybody who needs to even just go to barnesandnoble.com. If you go to barnesandnoble.com and search The Power to Speak Naked, they're more than happy to put you on the wait list. The book will drop September 7th for anybody who wants. And anybody who goes and gets the method, we give you an opportunity to get a copy a little bit early too. So best way to get me, SeanTylerFoley.com. And I look forward to serving your audience in any way that I can.
Brilliant. Yeah. And I put all the links in the podcast description. So thank you very much, Tyler. So that's all for the Speaking Podcast. You'll find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. Until next week, take care.